Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, creator of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, a freelance writer focused on food and health.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about enchilada casserole, quinoa salad, and the pandemic weight gain. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week.
The ketchup.
There is a shortage of ketchup packets in the country right now, which I thought was very interesting because it's not a nationwide ketchup shortage. There's enough ketchup. It's just that because the pandemic has increased takeout so much, there are not enough packets to go around, which is, you know, it makes sense, but it's a little crazy.
I don't know if it does make sense, because if you're taking the food home, why don't you just use your ketchup, your bottle of ketchup? Like, why? Who cares?
People are lazy. And it could be, too, that, like, restaurants are just throwing them in, you know. I don't know. I hate ketchup packets, personally. I find them very annoying. And I hate the amount of trash they produce. And so, like, I always just use the ketchup at home. But I guess other people are lazy.
Dan and I were talking about this earlier in the week, actually. And he took the hard stance that ketchup packets should not exist.
Whoa.
I think there's a time and a place for a ketchup package, but they should not be the way they are everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be overly judgmental, and I also maybe think that, like, drive-thru should not exist, but I know that that's, like, a not irrational point of view on my part. So, let's say that there's a time and a place for drive-thru. That is the time where you need your ketchup packet because you're eating on the go, right?
Yes. As a parent of small children, I will say that the times when we have been, like, out in the suburbs with the kids in the car, I have never been more grateful in my whole life for a drive-thru, because the act of, like, getting them out of the car seats and getting them into the store and then controlling them while they're in there, like, that's all, you know, removed when there's a drive-thru.
I think the last time I went through a drive-thru was 1995, when I was briefly on my college's debate team, and we went to a tournament in Ithaca, New York, and we drove. I mean, I didn't drive. I didn't even know how to drive at that time. But that's the, I haven't been to drive,
oh,
any drive-thru of any kind since then.
Oh, I have.
Book tours.
Yeah, book tours, definitely. The times that I've, like, driven through the South, or 2 years ago when I drove, like, from Indiana to Illinois, there was a lot of drive-thru.
Yeah, but it seems Heinz is on the case of making more ketchup for packets.
It's true. Yeah, they're increasing their production lines by 25%. So fear not, Americans, there will be more ketchup packets.
But, and, I mentioned this. I'm pretty sure I mentioned this last week, but we made your beet ketchup because Dan is so sick of buying ketchup in plastic bottles.
And it's a good option.
Recommend it. I recommend it. Yeah, so let us know about your ketchup packet use. Do you have them squirreled away in the butter drawer, or, like, wherever people keep their almost everyone has that packet of, like, or that drawer of packets, like, their little.
I have a plastic cup in one of the cabinets that has, like, soy sauce, duck sauce, and ketchup in it, just in case. You never know when you're going to be out and you need those packets.
Yeah.
And then I throw it out every so often and start fresh, because I don't know why. It feels like the right thing to do.
Well,
I could be wrong.
Maybe you could have sold or saved those ketchup packets and sold them on the black market.
I know. They're a commodity. Jeez.
So, yeah. And yet another pandemic phenomenon.
So many strange things have happened over the last year.
So talk to me about what's for dinner in the McClellan house this week.
So I made an enchilada casserole and was reminded once again of what a useful technique that is, because it's not like I didn't use a recipe.
My stomach is growling at the mere words enchilada casserole.
I had a packet of corn tortillas in the freezer that had been getting a little bit elderly, and I suspected when I pulled them out that they were going to be kind of crumbly, and I was right. And so they weren't great for tacos. I turned them into some bean and sweet potato quesadillas one night for me, and bean and cheese for the boys. Scott had some chicken quesadillas. So, I mean, we used them in various ways, but I knew that they needed to become something in order to be palatable to us. And so I opted for an enchilada casserole. I had also done like a braised chicken breast in the Instant Pot, one of my, you know, my beloved technique of a jar of salsa and a couple pounds of chicken. And then, you know, on high pressure for like 35 minutes. And then when it's all done, if it's at all too watery, you just turn it on saute and kind of stir it and work it until the water evaporates out and you get this really nice pulled chicken. So for my enchilada casserole, I used an 8x8 baking dish. And I had a bottle of Trader Joe's enchilada sauce. I did not make it from scratch. I have done that, but this time I was going for ease. So I poured a little enchilada sauce on the bottom of the pan. I kind of tiled in a layer of tortillas. And then I also, before I started building, I sauteed up an onion, a couple of green peppers, and a bundle of chopped kale. And so I layered the chicken, this veggie medley, and then I opened a can of kidney beans, because that's what I had, and a can of corn, and drained them both. And then I literally like shook them out of the can. This was not nuanced, highly delicate cooking. This was like, okay, I have 5 minutes to assemble all of this stuff before I have to go deal with bedtime. So I'm going to dump it in. So a layer of tortillas, a layer of chicken, a layer of my sauteed vegetables that I had done earlier in the day. And then I'm literally shaking cans of corn and beans over that. And then a layer of sauce. And then I did this, and then tortillas. And then I did that three times. And then at the top, I added a layer of tortillas, a little bit more sauce, and just a tiny amount of cheese. And then I baked it. And let me tell you, it was great. It was so good. And the thing about the enchilada casserole is, you can put anything in there. Like literally you could do a, like a tomatillo salsa version. You could do it with more roasted vegetables. Like I could see, doing like diced sweet potato in there, like beans and diced sweet potato, tomatillos, a regular, like tomato salsa could be your sauce. Like it's just a flexible technique. And I think that everyone should wrap their arms around it and say, let me lay your tasty things in corn tortillas with some sauce and bake it, because it was so good.
You know, it's sort of it's reminding me of I had this boyfriend throughout basically my whole college career. He was terrible. That's why I never talk about him. It was like not a good chapter in my life. There was very, very little to say about that experience, but he did cook a few things. And, you know, I came from a house where there was like not a lot of home cooking.
Yeah.
So like the things that he made were dazzling to me. And there are two that I can call to mind right now. One is an omelet. Like he could make your basic cheese omelet, which I thought was fancy and spectacular. And he made the same thing, only he called it Mexican lasagna.
Yeah, I guess you could call it that too.
And because we were in college, it was like basically 100% of opening cans. Like we used refried beans, salsa, cheese, you know, probably pre-shredded cheese. But I remember liking it then. I thought it was super tasty then.
It's delicious. We ate it. I did it in the 8x8 pan, which yielded 9 squares. And so it made 2 dinners plus leftovers for lunch. And it was great. It was so lovely and easy and reheated well. And the corn tortillas, the thing that happens when you bake the corn tortilla and something like that, it gets almost creamy. It's like it really softens and becomes this really pleasurable, creamy texture that I like almost as much as a delicious fresh corn tortilla. It's good.
I like the name, the more accurate enchilada casserole name, because it lets you, like anything that would be good in an enchilada would be good here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's incredibly easy to veganize or adapt for different dietary needs.
Gluten could be gluten-free, obviously, whenever you're working with tortillas as a base. Yeah.
No, it's really flexible and versatile, and I highly encourage everyone to make one.
I'm going to keep that in mind as an alternative to my, you know, I've been doing the...
chilaquiles?
Yes, I've been doing chilaquiles with any aged tortillas, but maybe this is what I'll do next time.
Yeah, and what I did for that 8x8 pan is I put 2 sort of on the diagonal, and then I cut 1 in half. And so 3 with 1 cut in half was the perfect amount to cover the bottom of the pan. But if yours were even more dried out than mine, you could even just crumble them, because it doesn't, like it's all going to kind of bake together. The one trick with something like this is that you, after it's baked fully, you got to let it sit for like 10 or 15 minutes to kind of firm back up, or it's all going to slide apart again when you cut it. But if you give it a little time, then it really cuts beautifully. And
let it rest.
You know, yeah.
You know, I made last week such a fantastic vegan, like nacho style sauce for, I was on a burrito and a quesadilla spree. That would be equally delicious in this
absolutely
format. So yeah, I think that that's a good one to keep in mind. I was making a different kind of dish this past week. You know, I subscribe to Debbie Koenig's The Family Plan newsletter. We've had Debbie on the show to talk about it. And I'm just in a family of two, so I'm hardly like her target market, but I always love looking at her recipes. She always provides vegetarian and vegan options. And I definitely find recipes I wouldn't have found otherwise, including this quinoa salad I made last week from the blog Cookie and Kate. Now, Cookie and Kate to me belongs to this category of vegan blogs that I don't love so much because I think of them as being like too vegan or something. Like the food is often very like aggressively abstemious and healthy. Like a lot of it tends to be both gluten-free and vegan, and I'm not always so into that. But it turns out sometimes I am because this recipe
I met Kate once.
Oh yeah? And what what was your 10-2 cents?
She was very nice, but I definitely agree with your assessment. It's like her site is the kind where you would use the word clean and not be ironic. You know, it's like I use the word, the phrase,
and like all
clean
the problems
eating.
That go along with that word, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. But she was very nice. It was a little weird. It was a ball canning, like ambassadors weekend, and she was one of the ball canning people, and she had never before canned in her life. And it really bugged me that she was like the headliner of this ball canning live stream simply because she had a large following, but she had never so much as approached a water bath before in her existence. So,
and
anyway.
I'll tell you, let me be totally transparent about this recipe. It was on the Cookies and Kate blog, but it was actually from some other cookbook. It was like reprinted on the... But okay, so I digress. Sometimes aggressively healthy vegan and gluten-free food is quite delicious, and this is one of those times. it was a quinoa. They called it a Thai quinoa salad, but I can't go that far. It's a quinoa salad with a Asian-inspired peanut dressing and crunchy vegetables. The original recipe called for cabbage, snap peas, and carrots. I only had cabbage at the time, so I just used more cabbage, and that was perfect. So you start out by making a big quantity of quinoa. I think it was 3/4 cup dried, which makes quite a bit. And then you make a peanut sauce, which is like what you're thinking, you know, sort of like a more elaborate version of the simple peanut sauce you shared recently, although that sauce would be totally fine here. And then, you know, I added all my cabbage, which it was, I think, 3 cups of shredded cabbage. I used purple. It was very pretty. Like tons and tons of herbs. I used parsley and cilantro. And then you toss it all with the sauce and you serve chopped peanuts on top at the end.
Sounds good.
And it was so good. I have a few, I'm going to link to the recipe, but I have a few caveats that I'm going to share.
Okay.
And one of them is cook the quinoa my way, not her way.
I was going to ask if you changed, if the instructions included how to cook the quinoa and if you...
Soggy. You get soggy quinoa if you follow their instructions. Now, I do have a good method for making a dry, fluffy pilaf, the absorption method, as it's called. But for something like this, I do a much simpler thing, which is I just boil it like pasta, which takes about 10 minutes, drain it, and then I will do one of a few things. I'll put it back in the hot pot, maybe even put the pot over low heat, and stir it until the quinoa is all well and truly dry. Or I will spread it out on a baking sheet and put it in like a 200-degree oven until it's dry. Because you, in a salad especially, you want dry, fluffy quinoa. And of course, that I think helps the dressing sink in a bit. And because cabbage is such a hearty vegetable, it really stands up. We ate it for several days and it only improved over time. I did not mix the peanuts in, and I would suggest you not mix the peanuts in, like chop peanuts to serve so that it remains like very crispy. And of course, I added a minced jalapeno because I just really enjoy spicy foods.
Sounds good. It also sounds like a place where pickles would go really nicely, like a little pickle garnish, like a pickled red onion perhaps.
Oh, for sure.
You know, or a pickled jalapeno. That would be really good on there.
Yeah. It was just... really delightful, surprisingly delightful. When I ate it, I was like, we should probably eat more of this aggressively healthy food, because as much as I can sometimes take a position against it for on principle, I do really like it.
There's space for all things. There's space for, you know, these kind of super healthy, crunchy, you know, satisfying salads. And there's space for, you know, vegan nacho sauce. Like, I feel like there's space for all of it. There's space for, you know, dairy nacho sauce. There, you know.
This sort of brings me to my next topic, which is I have finally gained weight in the pandemic. I always keep a close eye on my weight because it can, I have a long history of yo-yo dieting, and it can, I can be in denial for a long period of time. So I'm really good about, it doesn't affect me. I really see it as a neutral data point, but the data is showing me that I'm like up 5 pounds. And so I was thinking about what's going on here, and, I blame Isa Chandra Moskowitz. I've been cooking a lot from her books, which are long on pasta and short on quinoa salads. You know, it has been a time for comfort foods. And I've been on a dessert tear, like a maniacal dessert tear for months, you know, if not for a whole year. Remember when I borrowed your ice cream maker? Like, this has been going on since then. But I think even more is that I have not, I realized that I had been eating automatically and not allowing myself to experience hunger. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you have the issues with emotional eating that I have.
Oh, of course I do. I think we, you know, I do, but it's just, I think it's different.
But I realized I couldn't remember the last time I had allowed myself to become hungry.
Yeah.
And so when I think about like wanting to get, you know, back to what has been my normal weight for years, I want to try to pay more attention to, oh, and I'll say one other thing. Maybe you're experiencing this as well. I eat all my meals with Dan, who is a man. Like a big man. We should not be eating the exact same amount of food, but that's what we end up doing a lot of time. You know, I forget that our portion should be different. So that's a thing too. And even though I'm eating very healthy things like chickpeas and rice, like if I'm eating twice as much chickpeas and rice as I really need to be eating, then that's not going to be ultimately, that's not ultimately going to support me being at the healthiest weight for myself. So, you know, I'm not one for like monitoring what I'm eating or like fad diets or whatever. So like, I would like to ditch these 5 pounds. So like my plan here is to like, hunger is not an emergency. It's, I don't need a snack. If I'm feeling a little hungry at 4 p.m., I can wait till dinner or like 10 a.m. The other thing is like, it doesn't have to be all comfort food all the time. Something like that quinoa salad is like a perfectly satisfying. I need to remember that I like to eat that stuff too. Dessert is really not a thing that I want to have in my life every night. I think dessert should be a little special, you know, on the weekend, somebody's birthday. Like, it doesn't need to be like an everyday thing. So I'm not super rattled about it, but we have talked about this before, and I felt that we were a bit smug about not gaining weight during the pandemic. So I wanted to be totally transparent and say, that's a thing that I have been confronting this week.
I would say, Joy, to remember to be kind to yourself about this too, that bodies, it's normal for bodies to fluctuate, and that we have just been through one of the most stressful years on record. And so it's perfectly okay to want to address it and get back to the weight that you feel comfortable at, but also remember that it's okay. Like, this is not a failing on your part. You have done what you've needed to do to get through the last year. And it's okay that desserts have been part of your coping mechanism. You know, this is not a moral failing. You've done nothing wrong.
Yeah, I don't look at it as a moral failing. What I do see it is like a little bit of like a lapse of mindfulness.
Okay.
A disconnection from listening to my body the way I want to be.
That's fair.
So, yeah, I'm not feeling, I'm not beating myself up about it or thinking that it's a moral failure at all. I'm only thinking that it does definitely give me more empathy, like lots of empathy, because I know so many people are dealing with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even though last time we talked about this, I feel like maybe we painted a picture like I have it all under control. But I don't always have my eating habits all under control and buttoned up.
Hey, neither do I. And, you know, I have definitely, so my relationship with my body right now is okay, but it's hard. It's like I still haven't gotten back to myself since being pregnant. You know, I'm still nursing my
Which,
twins.
Doesn't that just make you feel like you don't even belong to yourself in a way? Like, I can't imagine.
It's definitely a strange thing to have, like, your body making food for other, for people. Like, that is a weird thing. And so it has skewed my conception, or not skewed, the amount of food I need to be nursing two small people is more than I need when I'm not. And I eat a lot right now. And I definitely, like, that's sometimes the thing that trips me up. I'm like, I think, oh, I shouldn't be hungry. I've had all this food today. How can I still be hungry or need, like, a little bit of granola or something at the end of the day? How is this possible? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, two 28 to 30 pound babies, toddlers, sucked liquid from my body for more than an hour of total time today. I need to replace that.
You probably cannot relate to the experience of not feeling hunger for weeks at a time.
I feel like I'm always hungry or thirsty. And so, you know, for me personally, I'm at my lowest weight in my adult life that I've consistently maintained. And the thing I, you know, feel some trepidation about is, like, finding my way back to a balanced diet for a non-nursing body once I wean them. And, you know, my plan is to really start working on that when they turn two, because I think they would nurse forever if I didn't cut them off. And I gotta get back. You know, it's like I need that tether to be severed soon, because it's hard. It's like, it's just this hard thing that I love it. I'm so glad that I've been able to provide it for them. I have no, like, resentment or, like, oh God, but it's just a long time to not feel like you belong entirely to yourself. And so I'm looking forward, as much as I'm going to miss it, I'm also looking forward to not needing to wear clothes that I can pull up so that somebody can get to my boobs. And lately they have enough language skills where they come up to me and yell boob, and that's how they ask if they can nurse now, which
that's
is
crazy.
And I feel like if you can run up to someone and yell boob, maybe it's time to be done with the boobs. Having been pregnant with twins, which I was always hungry, like, I feel like I've just been hungry for 2.5 years.
Don't you think when you stop nursing that your hunger levels will go down, and it will probably, as long as you, like, remain mindful of how you're feeling, it won't be I don't think it'll be a huge problem for you.
I hope so. It'll just have to be, like, changing my preset understanding. So, like, when I make peanut butter toast right now, I always make two slices. So when I stop nursing, I'm going to need to remember that, hey, you don't need a second slice of toast right now because your body is not making milk. And so just kind of being conscious and mindful of those changes is, you know, just going to be something I need to remember, because it's so easy to be sort of on autopilot with these things.
Yeah. Automatic meals and snacking and automatic portioning of things have identified that as, like, my current issue.
Yeah. But, you know, all this to say that however you're dealing with this time period, and I'm talking to everybody out there, it is okay. We are not, like, your body is your body and you're doing your best to get through, and neither of us are judging you. We are loving you. We are supporting you to, you know, to do whatever you need to do to get through this time.
Yeah. I mean, I have no moral judgments about people. I believe in body autonomy, you know, like,
yeah.
I have heart health issues that I'm trying to manage without medication, which like weight does play a role in that. Like,
yeah.
Also, you know, I like to be active. Weight plays a role in that. Like, for me personally, it's a priority, but if it's not your priority, it's not your priority, you know? I think it's a very personal thing. Like, I'm sure plenty of people have made peace with their body during this time. I'm sure plenty more people have been at war with their body at this time. And there's no doubt that food plays a role in how a lot of people cope with things, you know? So, yeah, I'm just sharing this to be, like, totally transparent. And also, like, maybe to ask for other, like, light, healthy recipe suggestions that you might want to share with me or with someone who's been eating, like, a lot of bread-based meals, you know?
Yeah.
So I can't rely on Debbie for all of my new meal ideas.
I really want to get a copy of the new Heidi Swanson book. I bet that one has a lot of useful recipes.
Oh, when I looked at it, when it was done and I looked at it, I was like, wow, this is like 101 cookbooks. Is that what her blog is called?
Yeah.
This is like 101 cookbooks recipe in a good way.
Yeah.
In a good way. I should visit. I should take a peek on that site and see what jumps out at me. Anyway.
There's lots of good stuff there.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
So let me tell you about something I'm loving right now. And it's a silly little simple trick more than anything. Since the weather has turned a little bit warmer, I have been craving sort of like iced drinks. And a couple of times when I was out walking with the boys, I would place an order for an iced green tea from Starbucks. And then what I would do is park the stroller outside. The Starbucks near my apartment it's all glass, so I can park the stroller, keep an eye on the boys, dash in, pick up my pre-ordered drink, and dash back out. And I did that twice, and then I thought, oh yeah, I don't love all this plastic, and I'm just getting iced green tea. I can make this at home. And so what I've started doing is each morning when I make my normal mug of tea, I heat up enough water to also make a quart jar of ice cream tea. And what I do is my kettle has a thermometer on it, so I catch it before it gets to the boiling point. So I pull the kettle off when it reaches between 175 and 180 degrees Fahrenheit, pour it into my jar with two green tea bags, because you don't want to do green tea at the boiling point because it can make it bitter. And so then I put the kettle back on, I bring it all the way up to the boil for my black tea. And then while I'm eating breakfast, I just let the green tea steep. When I'm finished eating, I pull the tea bags out and I just leave it on the countertop and let it cool. And when I'm ready to drink it later in the day, I drizzle just a tiny bit of honey in, I add a couple ice cubes, I pop a straw in my quart jar, and that's my delicious, tasty iced green tea that cost a fraction of what the Starbucks version cost and didn't produce any waste and tastes just as good.
I love iced green tea. I don't know why I don't make it for myself. I should.
It's easy.
One of the things I extra love about it is it doesn't seem to keep me awake at night.
Yeah. Yeah, I can drink it in the afternoon and not experience any sort of caffeine repercussions, which I appreciate.
It does have less caffeine than coffee, but it also has the amino acid L-theanine, which mm-hmm. helps calm your mind without causing sleepiness, but it does sort of balance the caffeine that is there. So
yeah,
I should make myself some right after this recording, because as I mentioned before we started, I got up at 6 a.m. and I will probably want a iced tea at like, I don't know, 3 or 4.
Yeah. No, and over the years, I've done this with lots of different tea, whether it's black tea or herbal tea.
I love a hibiscus tea, too.
And so, you know, as the day's warm here, just making it in the morning, setting up yourself for sort of putting your iced afternoon drink on autopilot means you're not going to want to go spend the money at a store, at a shop. And unless you want to support your local shop, but I don't need to support Starbucks. You know, that's just... They're going to be fine whether I buy my green tea from them or not. So
at the risk of like running this podcast over, I just want to say two other things. One is that I just watched the documentary Seaspiracy, which was about like the destruction of the oceans. And of course, a big culprit there is plastic. So like, I am not into, I've never been less into getting plastic coffee cups, or iced tea cups, which is a big obstacle. I mean, that's at odds with my enjoyment of coffee shops and like supporting them and also just like enjoying them. And but I did see somewhere, and maybe I should save this for food news on another week, but I Starbucks is implementing like a deposit cup program where you get like a reusable cup and you pay, you put a dollar deposit down, and then when you bring it back to any Starbucks, you get your deposit back.
Huh.
Which I love.
Interesting.
Like on that
That's
big scale, like Starbucks, it's, I don't know if it's just a small pilot program, but I just love that. In the before times, I used to bring a jar to Rival Brothers and they would
yeah.
fill it up, but that was then. Now
Hopefully, we'll get
there's,
back to that.
yeah,
I
anyway.
feel like we lost a lot of ground in terms of environmental sustainability during the pandemic, and hopefully, we'll be able to claw some of that back.
They totally shelved the plastic bag ban in Philadelphia during the
Yeah.
pandemic, which stinks. Anyway, well,
Anyway.
to homemade tea that you drink out of a reusable container, whether it be a jar. Sometimes I look at my jars and I think, would I have all these jars if I weren't friends with Marisa? I don't know. Anyway, I think that about does it for this week's episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.